Chapter 17.
Take anything you want, Ernst, Benning said through the door. Act as though you were at home.
All right, Alphonse.
Graeber was stretched out in the bathtub. His army gear lay on a chair in the corner, gray, green, and disreputable as old rags. Next to it hung a blue suit that Reuter had found for him. Bending's bathroom was a big affair with green tile walls that shimmered with porcelain and nickel plate, a paradise by contrast with the roar and the stink of disinfectants in the shower room at the barracks. The soap was some that had come from France. Bath towels and hand towels were piled high. The water pipes had never been knocked out of order by bombs, and there was as much hot water as you wanted. There even were bath salts, a big bottle full of amethyst crystals. Graeber lay in the water, thoughtless and relaxed, enjoying the benison of warmth. He had learned long since that it was only the simple things that never disappointed one. Warmth, water, a roof, bread, quietness, and confidence in one's own body. He had decided to spend the rest of his furlough like this, without thought, relaxed and as happy as possible. Reuter was right. It would be a long time before he got another furlough. He pushed the chair with his army gear to one side so that he would not have to look at it. Then he took a handful of the bath salts and appreciatively strewed them in the water. It was a handful of luxury, and luxury was peace, just like the white tablecloth and the Germania, the wine and the delicacies of his first evenings with Elizabeth. He dried himself and slowly began to dress. The civilian clothes were light and thin after the heavy uniform. When he had finished dressing, he still felt as though he were in his underclothes. So unaccustomed was he to being without heavy boots, harness, and weapons. He looked at himself in the mirror and hardly recognized what he saw. An unfinished, half-baked young fellow looked out at him in surprise. Someone he would not have taken seriously if he had met him at the front.
"You look like someone making his first communion," Alphonse said. "Not like a soldier. What's up? Are you going to get married?"
"Yes," Graeber replied, startled. "How did you know?"
"It's the way you look. Not the same as before. No longer like a dog looking for a bone he has hidden and forgotten where. Are you really going to get married?"
"Yes."
"But Ernst, what a thing! Have you thought it over carefully?"
"No."
Bending looked at Graeber in bewilderment.
"I haven't had time for years to think anything over carefully," Graeber said. Alphonse grinned. Then he lifted his head and sniffled.
"What?"
he sniffed again.
"Is that you, Ernst? Damn it, it must be the bath salts. Did you take some? You smell like a whole bed of violets."
Graeber sniffed at his hand.
"I don't smell anything."
"You don't, but I do. Let it wear off. It's tricky stuff. Someone brought it to me from Paris. At first you hardly notice it, and later you're like a whole bush in bloom. We'll drown it out with good cognac."
Bending brought a bottle and two glasses.
"Prost, Ernst. So you're getting married. All my congratulations. I myself, of course, am and will remain a bachelor. Tell me, do I by any chance know your future wife?"
"No." Graeber drank up the cognac. He was angry with himself for having admitted the marriage, but Alphonse had caught him off guard.
"One more, Ernst. You don't get married every day."
"All right."
Bending put down his glass. He was becoming a little sentimental.
"If you should need any help, you must know that you can always count on Alphonse."
"What help? Things like that go quickly and simply."
"With you, yes. You are a soldier. You don't need any other papers."
"Neither of us does. After all, it's a war marriage.
For your wife, I believe you will need the usual papers. But you will find out about that. If it takes too long, we can always help along a bit. You know we have good friends in the Gestapo."
"The Gestapo? What's the Gestapo got to do with a war marriage? That's no concern of theirs."
Alphonse laughed contentedly.
"Ernst, there is nothing that isn't a concern of the Gestapo. As a soldier, you don't know about that. Besides, you don't need to worry about it. After all, you're not going to marry a Jewess or a communist. Nevertheless, they'll probably make inquiries. Routine matter."
Graeber did not reply. He was suddenly deeply alarmed. If any inquiries were started,
It was bound to come out that Elisabeth's father was in a concentration camp. He had not considered that, nor had anyone mentioned it to him.
Are you sure that's how it is, Alphonse?
Bending refilled the glasses.
I believe so. But don't worry about it. You're not going to adulterate your Aryan blood with subhumans and enemies of the state, eh?
He grinned.
You'll get your ball and chain fast enough, Ernst.
Yes.
Well then, Prost. After all, you met a couple of fellows from the Gestapo right here a while ago. If things go too slowly, they can help us out. Put on some pressure. They're big wheels, especially Riza, the thin one with the pince-nez.
Graeber stared straight ahead. Elisabeth had gone to the town hall that morning to ask for her papers. He had insisted on it.
Damn it, what have I started, he thought. What if their attention is called to her? Till now, they have left her alone. But wasn't it an old rule to hide when the weather got thick? If they thought of it, the Gestapo might send Elisabeth to a camp just because her father was in one.
He felt himself growing hot. What if they started making inquiries about her? If they asked that esteemed party member, Frau Lieser, for example? He got up.
What's the matter with you, Ernst?
Bending asked.
You haven't finished your drink. Happiness makes you absent-minded, eh?
He laughed at his joke. Graeber looked at him. Only a few minutes before, he had been a somewhat inflated, good-natured acquaintance, but now he was suddenly transformed into the representative of a dangerous, incalculable power.
Prost, Ernst, Bending said. Drink up. It's good cognac. Napoleon.
Prost, Alphonse.
Graeber put down his glass.
Alphonse, he said. Will you do me a favor? Give me 2 pounds of sugar from your storeroom, in 2 bags, 1 pound in each.
Lump sugar?
That doesn't matter. Sugar.
All right. But why do you need sugar? You ought to be sweet enough yourself now.
I want to bribe someone with it.
Bribe? But Ernst, we don't have to do that. Threats are much simpler. And more effective. I can attend to that for you.
Not in this case. Besides, it isn't really bribery. The sugar is for someone I want to have do me a favor.
All right, Ernst. And the wedding celebration will be at my house, eh? Alphonse will make a good witness.
Graeber thought this over rapidly. A quarter of an hour earlier, he would have taken refuge behind some excuse. Now he no longer dared to.
I don't think we'll have much of a celebration, he said.
Just let Alphonse attend to it. You'll sleep here tonight, won't you? Why should you come back here and change your uniform and then go trotting off to the barracks? Better just stay here. I'll give you a key to the house. You can come in whenever you like.
Graeber hesitated for an instant.
All right, Alphonse.
Bending beamed.
That's sensible. Then we can at last sit down together and gossip in comfort. We haven't had a chance to do that yet. Come, I'll show you your room.
He picked up Graeber's army gear and glanced at the decorations on the blouse.
You must tell me sometime how you got all these. You really must have done something special.
Graeber looked up. Bending's face suddenly had the same expression as on the day when the SS man, Heine, had drunkenly boasted about his exploits in the SD.
There's nothing to tell, he said. You get those things simply with the passage of time.
Frau Lieser stared at Graeber's suit. Then she recognized him.
You? Fräulein Kruse is not at home. You should know that.
Yes, I did know that, Frau Lieser.
Well, then?
She looked at him hostily. On her brown blouse shone a pin with the swastika. Her hair was oily and disordered. In her right hand she held a dust cloth, as though it were a weapon. I would like to leave a package for Fräulein Kruse. Will you put it in her room? Frau Lieser looked at him uncertainly. Then she took the bag of sugar, which he held out to her.
I have a second small package here, Graeber said. Fräulein Kruse has told me in what exemplary fashion you sacrifice your time for the common good. I have a pound of sugar here, and I don't know what to do with it. Since you have a child who can use sugar, I wanted to ask you whether you would like to have it.
Frau Lieser's face assumed an official expression.
We have no need for hoarders' goods. We are proud to get along with what the Führer allows us.
Your child, too?
My child, too!
That's the proper attitude, Graeber said, staring at the brown blouse. If everyone at home behaved like that, Many a soldier at the front would be in a happier frame of mind. But these are no hoarder's goods. This is sugar from a package the Fuhrer gives soldiers at the front who are leaving on furlough, so they can take it with them to their families. My family is missing, so you needn't hesitate to take it.
Frau Leiser's face lost some of its severity.
You came from the front?
Of course, where else?
From Russia?
Yes.
My husband is stationed in Russia, too.
Graeber pretended an interest he did not feel.
Where is he stationed?
With the Central Army Group.
Thank God it's quiet there for the moment.
Quiet? It's not quiet there. The Central Army Group is fully engaged, and my husband is in the very front line.
The very front line, Graeber thought, as though there still were such a thing as a front line. For a moment, he was tempted to explain to Frau Leiser what it was actually like beyond the wall of phrases about honor, Führer, and fatherland. But he gave it up at once.
I hope he'll come back soon on leave, he said.
He'll come on leave when his turn comes. We don't ask any favors.
Neither did I, Graeber remarked dryly. On the contrary, the last time I was here was 2 years ago.
Were you out there the whole time?
From the beginning, when I wasn't wounded.
Graeber stared at the unshakable party warrior.
Why do I stand here and justify myself in the eyes of this woman? He thought. I ought to shoot her down, just as her husband, who is probably in the SD, is shooting down Russian kulaks in order to gain that notorious Lebensraum for his Führer.
The Leiser's child came out of the room in which the desk stood. She was a thin girl with lusterless hair, who stared at Graeber and then began to pick her nose.
Why are you suddenly wearing civilian clothes?
Frau Leiser asked.
My uniform is being cleaned.
So that's it. I thought perhaps.
Graeber did not find out what she had thought. He suddenly saw that she was smiling at him with yellow teeth, and it almost terrified him.
Well, all right, she said. Thank you. I will use the sugar for my child.
She took the two packages, and Graeber noticed that she weighed one against the other in her hands. He knew she would open Elizabeth's as soon as he had gone, and that was just what he wanted. She would be amazed to find simply the second pound of sugar and nothing more.
That's right, Frau Leiser. Auf Wiedersehen.
Heil Hitler.
The woman stared at him.
Heil Hitler,
Graeber said. He went out of the house. Beside the front door, he found the house warden leaning against a wall. He was a little man with SA trousers, boots, and a round little paunch under his rooster chest. Graeber stopped. Even the scarecrow had suddenly become dangerous.
Nice weather today,
he said, getting out a package of cigarettes. He took one and offered the package to the man. The house warden grunted something and accepted one.
Discharged?
He asked with an oblique glance at Graeber's clothes. Graeber shook his head. He considered saying a few words about Elizabeth, but decided not to. It was better not to arouse the house warden's curiosity. In a week, I am off again, for the fourth time. The house warden nodded indifferently. He took the cigarette out of his mouth, looked at it, and spat out a few shreds of tobacco.
Doesn't it taste all right? Graeber asked.
Oh, sure. But I'm really a cigar smoker.
Cigars are in damn short supply, aren't they?
They certainly are.
I know someone who still has some boxes of good ones. Next time I have the chance, I'll take a couple and bring them along. Good cigars.
Imported?
Probably. I don't know much about them. Cigars with bands.
Bands mean nothing. Any bunch of beech leaves can have a band around it.
The man is a commander in the SA. He smokes a good weed.
A commander in the SA?
Yes, Alphonse Binding, my best friend.
Binding is your friend?
An old school friend, as a matter of fact. I have just come from seeing him. He and SS Commander Riza are old comrades of mine. I'm going over to Riza's house now.
The house warden looked at Graeber. Graeber understood the glance. The house warden did not understand why Health Counselor Kruse was in a concentration camp if Binding and Riza were such old friends.
Several mistakes have been cleared up, he said casually. Very shortly, things will be in order again. Some people will be surprised, I expect. One ought never to be too hasty, eh?
Never, declared the house warden with conviction. Graeber looked at his watch.
I must be off. I won't forget the cigars.
He went on. That was a pretty good start in corruption, he thought. But presently, uneasiness seized him once more. Perhaps what he had done was just the wrong thing. It seemed suddenly childish. Perhaps he should not have done anything at all. He stopped and stared down at himself. This damn civilian outfit. It seemed to be to blame for everything. He had wanted to escape from army regulations and to feel free. Instead, he had immediately got into a world of fear and uncertainty. He debated what more he could do. Elizabeth could not be reached before evening. He cursed the haste with which he had applied for the papers. Protection, he thought bitterly. Yesterday morning I was making a big point about marriage being a protection for her, and now it has become nothing but danger.
What's the meaning of these carnival jokes? A rude voice shouted at him. He glanced up. A little major was standing in front of him. Have you no conception of the seriousness of the times, you clown?
Graeber stared at him for a moment, not comprehending. Then he understood. He had saluted the major without remembering that he was wearing civilian clothes. The old man had interpreted this as derision.
Mistake, he said. Forget it.
What? You have the gall to make stupid jokes? Why aren't you a soldier?
Graeber looked at the old man more closely. He was the same one who had given him a dressing down the evening he had been standing with Elizabeth in front of her house.
A slacker like you ought to sink into the earth for shame instead of cutting capers like this, the major barked.
Oh, don't excite yourself, Graeber said angrily, and get back into your moth chest.
The old man's eyes took on an almost insane expression. He choked and turned red as a crab.
I'll have you arrested, he wheezed.
You can't do that, as you should know yourself. And now leave me alone. I have other things to worry about.
Why, that's...
The major was about to burst forth afresh when suddenly he came a step closer and began to sniff with wide-open, hairy nostrils. His face contorted.
Ah, now I understand,
he announced disgustedly.
That's why you're not in uniform. The third sex. Pfui Teufel. A fairy. Wearing perfume. A male whore.
He spat, wiped his white, bristly mustache, threw Graeber one more glance full of abysmal disgust, and walked off. It had been the bath salts. Graeber smelled his hand. He could detect it now, too. A whore, he thought. I'm not far from being one, though. How corrupt a little fear for someone else can make you. Frau Leeser, the block warden, and what else mightn't I be ready to do? I've tumbled damned fast from my heights of virtue. He stood diagonally across the street from the headquarters of the Gestapo. In the entrance drive, a young SS man was walking up and down yawning. A couple of SS officers came out laughing. Then an elderly man approached, hesitated, looked up at the windows, halted, and took a slip of paper out of his pocket. He read it, looked around, glanced toward the sky as though taking leave, and then went slowly up to the guard. The SS man read the summons and let him in. Graeber stared up at the windows. He felt fear again, stickier, heavier and clammier than before. He was acquainted with many fears, sharp ones and dark ones, breathless ones and paralyzing ones, and also with the last great one, the animal's fear of death. But this was a different one. It was a creeping, strangling fear, undefined and threatening, a fear that seemed to soil, slimy and destructive, that was not to be seized and that could not be brought to bay, a fear of helplessness and gnawing doubt, the corrupting fear for others, for the guiltless victims, the unjustly persecuted, the fear before the caprice of power and automatic inhumanity. It was the black fear of the times. He turned away. He felt helpless and miserable. Hirschland, he thought. Hirschland had known it too. Hirschland, who had become a soldier to protect his family, who had volunteered for patrols because he hoped that if he got a decoration, it would keep his father out of a concentration camp. Hirschland, whose parents he had promised to visit. He stopped. Where had he put the slip of paper with the address? All at once it seemed very important to him to go there immediately, as though it had a connection with Elisabeth, and as though everything would be all right with her if he only went there at once. It was childish, but as a soldier one learned to believe in strange happenings. He searched in all his pockets, and finally he found the slip in his paybook. It was a small three-storied house. He climbed to the third floor and rang twice more. Then the door was opened cautiously. A pale woman peered out. May I speak to Frau Hirschland?
I am Frau Hirschland.
The woman looked straight at him with very bright, staring eyes. I'm in the same company as your son, Graeber said. The woman continued to look at him. It was like the glance of a terrified animal that has been brought to bay and is ready to fight. Your son asked me to come and see you, Graeber said. I'm here on furlough. That's why I've got civilian clothes on.
Yes.
The woman opened the door wider.
Yes, please. Come in, please, Herr...
Graeber. Ernst Graeber. The woman preceded him into a living room. She walked noiselessly and very lightly. In the living room, against one wall, was a wide chaise longue with high legs. Over it was thrown a blue cover, which had been pulled down low in front. Graeber was about to sit down on the chaise longue when the woman pushed up a chair.
Here, you will be more comfortable in this. That over there, we only have this one room. That's the bed.
Graeber sat down on the chair. The room was clean and furnished in middle-class fashion. Over the chaise longue hung a few pictures. There were others on the two side walls. About 2 weeks ago, I was still with your son, Graeber said. The woman had not seated herself. Her glance had lost none of its glassy fixity, but her hands jerked restlessly this way and that.
Perhaps you will... I could... Perhaps you'd take a little something...
Graeber suddenly realized that he was very thirsty.
Thanks,
he said. A glass of water, if you happen to have a glass of water.
Yes, certainly.
Frau Hirschland looked around the room.
Yes, I will. In the kitchen. Just one moment. I'll go and get it.
She went. At the door, she looked around once more. What's the matter with her? Graeber thought. He was used to people being afraid, but this was something more than usual. He got up and looked at the pictures on the wall. They were reproductions. One was a chestnut tree in bloom, another the profile of a Florentine girl. The picture over the chaise longue was a big etching. He stepped closer to get a better view. In doing so, his foot jostled something behind the hanging cover. He bent down and lifted the cover to see whether he had upset anything. He saw two narrow cardboard boxes arranged end to end and extending almost the whole length of the chaise longue. One was at an angle. Graeber pushed it straight. As he did so, he saw a girl's hand in the crack between the two boxes. Someone was lying behind the boxes next to the wall, with her arm pressed close to her body. He let the cover fall and went back to his chair. Frau Hirschland came in. She was carrying a lacquer tray on which there was a small glass of red wine. On a plate next to it were two slices of bread.
Please have something, she said.
Graeber took a sip. The wine was very sweet and sticky. Things are going well with your son, he said. When I left, we were in reserve position. All of us like your son. The woman looked at him. He took another sip. He was surprised that she did not ask him where they were located, how the food was, whether it was dangerous, and all the questions mothers ask.
So things were going well with him?
She asked finally. As well as is possible in the field. Now it's just about the same here as out there, almost equally dangerous. He waited a while longer, but Frau Hirschland asked nothing more. Perhaps she is worried about the girl she has hidden, Graeber thought. That's really all, he finally said lamely and stood up. The woman walked noiselessly with him to the door. Your son and I are good friends. Do you want me to take him some message? I have to go back in a week.
No,
she replied, barely audibly. I can take something to him, a letter or a package. I can come and get it before I leave. She shook her head. Graber looked at her in amazement. Parents weren't usually like this. He thought she did not trust him and got out his paybook. Here are my papers. I'm just accidentally in civilian clothes. She raised her hand as though to push the paybook aside, but she did not touch it.
He is dead,
she whispered. What? She nodded. But how is that possible? He was the last one I talked to.
Dead,
the woman whispered.
The news came 4 days ago.
She shook her head rapidly as Graber was about to ask something more.
No, please don't. Forgive me. Many thanks. I can't. Letters still keep coming from him. One just today. No, please.
She shut the door. Graber went down the stairs. He tried to recall Hirschland. He had known very little about him, not even his first name. He thought of the cigarettes Hirschland had given him. It was too bad he had not taken more trouble with him. But it was too bad about so many others, too. Hirschland had had a miserable life. Now his mother was sitting up there, hiding another child. Perhaps the child of a second marriage in which more Jewish blood was involved, making her ripe for a concentration camp. He paused on the half-darkened stairs and was suddenly wholly at a loss. Threatening and hopeless, the darkness closed in around him and it seemed as though there was no escape anymore. If someone had to be hidden for that reason, he thought, then what might not happen to Elizabeth? He was standing in front of the factory long before closing time. It took a while before Elizabeth came. He was already beginning to fear that she had been arrested in the factory when he finally saw her. She was taken aback to see him in civilian clothes and began to laugh.
How young you are,
she said. I don't feel young. I feel 100 years old.
Why? What has happened? Do you have to go back ahead of time?
No, all that is all right.
Do you feel 100 years old because you were wearing civilian clothes?
I don't know. But it seems to me that I've put on all the cares of the world along with this damn outfit. What have you done about your papers?
Everything,
Elizabeth replied, beaming.
I used my lunch hour. All the applications have been made.
Everything, Graber said. Then there is nothing more to be done.
What needs to be done?
Nothing. I just suddenly got frightfully anxious. Perhaps what we are doing is a mistake. Perhaps it could hurt you.
Me? How?
Graber hesitated. I have heard that sometimes an inquiry is made by the Gestapo. That's why we perhaps ought to have left everything alone. Elizabeth stood still.
Have you heard anything?
No, nothing. It was just that I suddenly got frightened.
You mean I might be arrested because we want to get married?
Not that.
What then? Do you mean they might find out my father is in the concentration camp?
Not that either, Graber interrupted. They certainly know that already. I mean that perhaps it would be better not to call anyone's attention to you. The Gestapo is unpredictable and someone there might get some idiotic idea. You know how that sort of thing happens. No trace of justice about it. Elizabeth was silent for an instant.
Then what shall we do?
She asked. I've been thinking about it all day. But I believe there's nothing more we can do. If we withdrew your applications, they might become all the more suspicious. She nodded and looked at him strangely.
Just the same, we could try to withdraw them.
It's too late, Elizabeth. Now we must take the risk and wait. They walked on. The factory was situated on a small square and was clearly visible. Graber looked at it carefully. Have you never been bombed here?
Not yet.
The building stands pretty much in the open. It's easy to spot it as a factory.
We have big cellars.
Are they safe?
Fairly so, I think.
Graber glanced up. Elizabeth was walking along beside him, not looking at him.
For God's sake, understand what I mean,
he said.
I am not afraid for myself. I am simply afraid for you. You don't need to be afraid for me.
Aren't you?
I have already had all the fears there are. I have no place left for new ones. But I have. When you love someone, there are many new fears you didn't know about at all before.
Elizabeth turned toward him. She smiled suddenly. He looked at her and nodded.
I haven't forgotten the speech I made day before yesterday, he said.
Do you really have to be afraid before you know whether you love someone?
I don't know, but I think it helps.
This damned outfit. I won't wear it again tomorrow. And I thought civilians had an enviable life.
Elizabeth laughed.
Is it just the clothes?
No, he said with relief.
It comes from being alive again. I'm alive again and I want to go on living. And when that's how it is, apparently you become afraid again. It was horrible all day long. It's better now, though, since I have seen you. And yet nothing has changed. Strange how little foundation there has to be for fear.
Or love,
Elizabeth said.
Thank God.
Graber looked at her. She was walking beside him, free and unconcerned.
She has changed, he thought. She changes every day. It used to be that she was afraid and I wasn't. Now it's reversed.
They walked past the Hitlerplatz.
Behind the church hung a splendid sunset.
Where's the fire now?
Elizabeth asked.
Nowhere. It's just the sunset.
The sunset? We don't count on that anymore, do we?
No.
They walked on.
The sunset became stronger and deeper. It touched their faces and hands.
Graber glanced at the people who were coming toward them.
He suddenly saw them otherwise than before. Each was now a human being with a fate of his own. It was easy to judge and to be brave when one had nothing, he thought. But when one possessed something, the world changed. It made things easier and harder, and sometimes almost impossible. It was still bravery, but it looked different, and it had entirely different names, and it really began only there. He took a deep breath. He felt as though he had returned from a long, dangerous patrol in enemy territory, less safe than before, but nevertheless secure for the moment.
Strange,
Elizabeth said.
It must be spring. After all, this is a bombed street and there's no sense in it. Nevertheless, I believe I already smell violets.